Welcome to the Nerd Party.
All right. Welcome to a brand new Aggressive Negotiations. This is one of your hosts, Jedi Master Matthew Rushen. I'm coming straight from down deep. Well, I'm not really in the South at all. I'm still living in the Northwest. I don't know where this is coming from, but John Mills, Jedi Master, please save me.
You're coming from south of the Rishi Maze. That's where you're coming from. That
is
the accent of the planet next to Camino McConaugheyville or something.
Yes, I love McConaugheyville.
Very laid back place.
Those guys are so nice.
They have big, wide fields of a green leafy plant that makes everybody very relaxed.
Yes, they do. and strangely, they all drive Lincolns.
Yeah, when they're not caught in their living rooms playing the bongos at 3 o'clock in the morning.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's great. It is. Welcome to Aggressive Negotiations. As you can tell, we have our own brand of zaniness that comes out every once in a while. We're excited you're here. We're going to talk a little Star Wars as we always do. And just wanted to, you know, remind you before you dive in with us to some Star Wars, you can find us all over the place. Anywhere you get your podcasts, you can find us, any podcatcher. But you can also, if you have an opportunity, hit us up on Apple Podcasts there. Give us a star rating review. Help people find us. You know every podcast asks for it. And you want to know why? Because it really does help people find the shows. Mm-hmm. And so we appreciate everybody who's gone and done that for us already. Just be one of those people and let us know what you think. And you know what? We mention every single review on the show, whether it was a 5-star review or a 1-star review. Mm-hmm. If it's written, we're going to let people know what you said.
We will. So. We will. We will share it with the galaxy.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, the HoloNet, we broadcast as much as we can on the HoloNet. So
yes, we do.
You can find us on Twitter at Join Nerd Party, or also the show has its own Twitter account that you can find, and that's The Jedi Masters. You can also find us on thenerdparty.com with all of the other shows that we have on The Nerd Party. Wonderful shows you should be checking out. And while you're there, if you'd like to send us an email, go to thenerdparty.com/contact, choose Aggressive Negotiations, and John and I will get that email, and we'll be able to correspond you with that. And lastly, we're on Facebook, facebook.com/TheNerdParty. It's a great way to interact with us, John. We had some incredible conversations about our last episode with some listeners about the Death Star.
We did. That one definitely seemed to...
That one blowed up.
Yeah. Ooh, hey, that's fitting. No, it really seems to have tickled the engagement bone, which was really great. We love talking with you guys. There were some amazing insights on Do You Want to Build a Death Star that were a lot of fun. So thanks, everybody.
Is the engagement bone next to the ring finger?
I'm terrible at I'm like the Dr. Zoidberg of Star Wars anatomy. So I'm not quite sure where the engagement bone is.
Oh man. Oh God. Well, John, before we get ourselves into more trouble, we decided that it was time to dive back into our book club and continue on with the Jedi Apprentice series. And we're talking about book 2, The Arrival. This one is written by Jude Watson. And, I was excited to dig into this one because it really is a continuation of the first book. And what's fun about these, and I think we might have said the last time, but... these books really do kind of feels like Clone Wars episodes, where it's about 22 to 30 minutes worth of material gets put in a book, and each book seems to be relatively connected to the next. So it's one great ongoing story. And so far, I'm really loving that because, again, it just fits with something that I talk about all the time that I love, which is the Clone Wars.
You bring up a great point that there is a Clone Wars feel to it because it is serialized. And it's serialized really well, I think, because you can come into it cold. You don't have to have read the first book to get into this one. It helps if you did, but there are references that fill in enough gap that you don't feel lost if you haven't read the first book. You know, I think that's a tremendous advantage because there's enough in there that it makes you want to go back and find out more detail on things. But this book is specifically about this episode in their lives. And again, I just enjoyed getting to know Qui-Gon Jinn better. I mean, it really is sort of a source of frustration for me. Like, this basically hit something that is a frustration for me. Remembering the time period of when the prequels came out, I'm really kicking myself for not reading these at that time because Qui-Gon is a character I wanted to spend more time with. So, you know, and I got on the Darth Maul bandwagon like everybody else, and I think I missed an opportunity here to just really enjoy and flesh out his character a bit. And, it was really interesting.
As you said, it picks right up where we left off as they're traveling to Bandamere, and they're both on their own missions, Obi-Wan Kenobi and Qui-Gon Jinn, because he hasn't chosen him as his apprentice yet. That's a source of frustration, obviously, for Obi-Wan, but he seems at this point also pretty resigned to the fact that he will probably be in the agricultural corps for the rest of his life. Whereas Qui-Gon is dealing with a revelation that his old apprentice may be back, and his old apprentice's name was Xantos. And I'm right there with you, John, and so I'm bringing it right back around to what you were saying about Qui-Gon. This did such a great job to kind of open up the floodgates of who Qui-Gon is as a character. And I think it fits also so well with the way Liam Neeson played him in The Phantom Menace. You can see the connections there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree.
And I really like that. I think that seeing that he had this experience with a Wunderkind before makes it really interesting when you go into The Phantom Menace and see that he has another experience with another Wunderkind. And he just kind of seems to have this knack for picking up these pathetic life forms that may be also incredibly awesome for the galaxy.
I'm glad you said that because that was something that was a point of debate among me and my friends back when Phantom Menace came out, was I always took a certain reaction shot, maybe a little too much to heart. I don't know. I don't think so, but when Qui-Gon shows up with Anakin, the reaction of the council fits in with, and this story fits in with the way I read their reaction to him bringing Anakin, where, you know, he's like, oh, I found the, basically Qui-Gon's like, oh, I found the chosen one, you know, strongest, you know, collection of midichlorians. And there's a reaction specifically from Mace Windu, like, you know, looking at Yoda, and you see a reaction shot from Ki-Adi-Mundi, which was very easy to read as, oh, here we go. Qui-Gon's brought somebody else, you know, like, and I think that this fits into that where Qui-Gon is the type that, and this is not a knock against his character, but it shows why he is, in a sense, such a, I don't know, true Jedi versus what the Jedi have become, where he is willing to believe in finding the magical, mystical thing that everybody else overlooked. You know, he's, in a sense, you know, the story of this apprentice feeds into the idea that Qui-Gon was always convinced. He's like the guy who goes on, the metal detector search on the beach and is convinced he's going to find Spanish doubloons or something like that. And, you know, he's like, oh, I found gold. And everybody's like, again? Okay.
You know? You just made him sound like a crazy man.
Well, I think Qui-Gon is in a sense because he's, you know, he is a, but not like crazy in a bad way. Like he's so crazy enthusiastic about everything that's possible out there. And he, you know, if you think about it, yeah, he's dealing with it in this, but what a great addendum backstory as the guy who won't stop, like even his failures, once he deals with them, he's then just as enthusiastic about the next thing he's going to do. And you know, I like that. I like that. I just think it fits in
well,
nicely.
And the story, you know, really connects with Anakin as well because, you know, I think you'd say his father's name, Sion, is how I was saying it. And he is from this planet called Telos. And Xantos is his son, and they're very well-to-do. It almost reminds me of Dooku.
Yes.
Being from a family, mm-hmm. you know, very wealthy family, well-to-do family. Of course, when he leaves, he is a count again. Xantos is very much in that mold. But it was interesting to me because he's really at that point where he's old enough to know what he's missing.
Right.
Just the way Anakin is as well. And he apparently, you know, he had a good relationship with his father and a good, you know, childhood. It wasn't like he was in slavery or anything like that. But he's also somebody that Qui-Gon didn't listen to the own hesitation in his heart about this one, whereas you don't get that sense that he had that with Anakin
right.
at all.
Right. I do think that it's interesting because, again, just like in the first book where there was a Padawan who had a red lightsaber, you get a sense of it being a little bit free or a little less locked down as to what authors were able to do. Like, this is a book definitely from an era where, like, the original Expanded Universe books in the 90s, you know, earlier in the 90s, it was very much a sense of you can talk about anything, just don't talk about this. And I think that that birthed some greatly creative stuff. And I think that this fit, you know, this falls into that category. I mean, this is not, again, and you know, I said this last time too, it's not like this is an incredibly challenging book. This is definitely for a young audience. But the simple fact is, here we are, two older Star Wars fans coming back and revisiting it, and we're still finding these thematic nuggets that exist. And that's kind of mind-blowing because, again, this is not going to blow the doors open on anything. This is specifically something where you could look at it as an adult and say, oh, wow, if you took this and gave it another, you know, 200-300 pages, you could really develop a big masterwork out of this.
Yeah.
This isn't putting on airs and trying to be that. It's telling, it's like a literary Lucas mentality of, I'm going to cut this as close to the bone as I can and tell you the story, and you can come into it and, you know, make some of the leaps and jumps and have your own experience with it. And I really like that, and I'm really a huge fan of it. And I'm also a huge fan of the fact that, you know, you mentioned the sort of Clone Wars feel to it. We get a new character, a Findian. The name of Guerra is how I'm pronouncing it, which, of course, made me think of Saul Guerrera. I was like, oh, that's weird. But he was so similar, including to his speech cadence, to Honda Onaka, is what I was thinking of every time I read him.
Obi-Wan.
Right. No, he's like, aha, Obi-Wan, yes, we can do that, and we can break in. Ha, no, not really. Like, and that was, I wound up with Hondo's voice in my head every time the character spoke. And that was kind of fun. You know, again, it speaks to that common thread that exists in the works that support the main films, how it all really does work well together. I like that a lot.
Yeah, honestly, reading through these, you know, I'm thinking to myself, man, just make these canon. You know, like, you know, change the few things, like a red lightsaber right. when it isn't supposed to be, that, you know, whatever color. And then just because this stuff is really good, and you're saying all these things, and I'm really, what I love, again, is we're talking about the Qui-Gon Obi-Wan relationship, which we don't get to spend a lot of time on in the films anyway. Yeah. And I love seeing how Qui-Gon's experience with Xantos makes him worried about the idea of taking somebody like Obi-Wan, because he can see an passionate spirit in Obi-Wan, and he's reading that passionate spirit as being one that would be dangerous. And this whole story here is really about, in a lot of ways, him learning to let go of that past, which he's really, what's happened is Qui-Gon's wearing past colored glasses.
Right.
Like, yeah. Everything is viewed through the lens of the past. He can't move on. And so therefore he's stuck in it. And Obi-Wan and his actions throughout this book actually help Qui-Gon come to a place where he can let go of the past.
Yeah.
but also recognize what's in front of him for the future. And I thought that was really cool because there's a whole line at the end of the story where Qui-Gon says the moment when the master learns something from the apprentice is when you know that it's a partnership that's meant to be.
Yeah.
And I thought it was just one of those things. It was really, really beautiful way to put these two characters together who by the end of the story kind of fall into that wonderful rhythm that we'll see, you know, throughout the rest of the series, that also feels like it's such a great connection to the fun that they have together. You know, like when Obi-Wan turns to Qui-Gon and says, "You were right about one thing, Master. The negotiations were short."
Right. This speaks to that feeling of history between the two of them. And, you know, they are a good fit by the end of the book. I think that's a great point. I think what is great is this winds up avoiding a trap. And this was an era of expanded books where it was easy for this trap to be fallen into where pronunciation is a loose thing at best in Star Wars. With Xantos, Xanatos, I was always thinking
Xanatos, I was always, the freshman.
Right, yeah, I was always thinking Xanadu, which is a terrible movie with Olivia Newton-John.
Yes.
And, you know,
unfortunately, there was no roller skating Olivia Newton-John in the story, so, yeah.
He didn't leave the Order and become a Sith. He didn't leave the Order and lead an uprising. This showed a Jedi leaving the Order for something as simple as greed and just wanting to be his own thing. There wasn't like a big reveal where he said suddenly, "Oh, and I'm working for the Sith." It's just, no, he's just a jerk and he just wants power and money. And falls into the category of what we learned in the Clone Wars and what we're learning more even with Rogue One and everything, that there aren't just the two categories of Jedi and Sith. There are fallen Jedi who don't become Sith. There are, you know, dark side users who aren't affiliated with any side but themselves. And, you know, so that works. And I think that also it's a great deal of fun cleverness with the way that the symbology with his character of the broken circle and how it winds up playing into everything, including how they get out of the situation. And so, because spoilers, Qui-Gon and Obi-Wan don't die in this book. I'm going to get that right out. Sorry about that. But when the way that they figure out how to get out with the broken circle, and there's even intentional or not, that one of the steps they have to take is Qui-Gon figures out to take the broken circle that's in the logo, that is based on a scar, that's based on the past, and Qui-Gon takes it from a broken circle and turns it into a closed circle. That could very easily in the film be a symbol of him healing, piecing it together. Was that intentional? You know what? I'm going to give it the benefit of the doubt and say, yeah, that was very much intentional. It'd be very easy to come into a book at this, especially aimed at younger readers, and say, oh, that was just a MacGuffin. And it's like, well, yeah, but you could easily read symbolism into that too, of Qui-Gon visually has to close a broken circle to move forward. And it's the plot device that saves them and puts them on the path to solving the problem and saving everybody.
What I love about what you're saying is the fact that it's very clear to me that Jude Watson understands the way in which George Lucas kind of created Star Wars with the symbolism that you do use. And like you said, you can read it a couple of different ways, but I absolutely did kind of read it that way, that broken circle, that, you know, the circle had been broken for Qui-Gon, the whole idea of master, you know, apprentice becomes a master and a master takes on an apprentice, so that, you know, like that circle,
right,
that unbroken circle, and he's broken that now, and it's Obi-Wan that helps him heal that circle in himself.
Yeah.
And it was Obi-Wan's full emergence into the light side of the Force and the rejection of the dark side that makes that happen for Qui-Gon. And I thought that that was a really beautiful thing too, because it was a way of showing the power of the light side of the Force that the dark side doesn't have.
Yeah.
To influence lives positively. But I thought it was a really nice way to actually show the power of Obi-Wan as a character and what it was that won him over in the eyes of Qui-Gon was his goodness, was his connection to doing the right thing, even if it was going to cost him his life, which is the exact opposite of what we ended up seeing Xantos not doing, which was he gave up the Jedi Order so he could go be rich with Daddy, basically.
Yeah, and basically be a sort of sort of like a tyrannical butcher, you know, with everything that happened on Telos, which was that's pretty dark, man. That's pretty grim. And you know, and by the end of the book, he turns into sort of a Moriarty figure. Like there is a fun sense of adventure. I mean, granted, the stakes are so high, and you know you're dealing with all of this stuff, but there's a fun sense of adventure of the villain who will dog our Sherlock Holmes team, you know, with Qui-Gon as Holmes and Obi-Wan as I lost the character's name.
Watson.
And Obi-Wan as Watson, you know, like you can see this forming up where it's going to become a series of events where, you know, Xanatos is always one step ahead of them but, you know, setting these traps and then having a backup plan in case they get out of the traps. Because Qui-Gon even says, and the story speaks about him saying he always has a plan B. He always has, you know, a second option. And I it's kind of fun. It's like, oh, okay, well, this is going to be a fun character to chase around the galaxy because you know that he's not going to be a one and done. And, you know, you can dig that. That would be, you know, that's pretty cool. That's pretty darn neat. But
so you're saying he's going to chase them around Petition's Flame?
Yeah, right? Yes. He's going to be, there's going to be a Con Kirk thing happening. but, you know, there were a couple of things because again, it's so lodged in my brain about how sometimes fans fill in gaps or things are accepted as fact within the Star Wars galaxy. And then something happens in a book or in one of the films where you say, well, wait, that can't happen because, and then you think about it and you say, well, did they ever really say that? And it was Qui-Gon uses a mind trick on a Hutt. And it was always accepted. It's always been accepted by me because of the example of Jabba in Return of the Jedi. You know, mind tricks will not work on me. And then, like, it sort of ensconces itself as, oh, well, therefore all Hutts are immune to mind tricks. That was just sort of an accepted fact when I was growing up that Hutts as a rule were immune to mind tricks. And then Qui-Gon uses the mind trick. And I stopped and I thought about it and I said, you know, there really isn't anything that says officially before this point in all of the works and everything. I don't think that there was anything that officially said that Hutts themselves were immune, or if Jabba was just, you know, the only example of a Hutt that we had. You know?
No, I was thinking that too when we were reading the story. And, you know, obviously we have a statement in episode one, you know, I'm a Toydarian, mind tricks don't work on me, only money.
Right.
You know, so you can get the feeling that Toydarians as a species may be immune to mind tricks. But yeah, Hutts, it does feel like maybe the fact that Jabba, and we saw it at the Clone Wars, has an experience with a lot of Jedi, has learned, maybe he isn't just a big fat slug, maybe he's learned to train his mind to be immune to those effects.
Or he just...
which would make sense why you would want to do
it. Yeah, well, I mean, it could be as simple as he just expects it. You know, to speak to your point, he's had all of these experiences, and so he knows the first thing that a Jedi is going to do is try to, like, you know, snooker him with the mind trick, and he's, you know, it's like they say with hypnosis, where if you're, you know, resistant to it, it's just not going to work on you. I mean, I tend to think that hypnosis is all bunk, but hey, that's just me. But the idea is that certain people are going to be resistant simply because they're expecting it. They're anticipating the trick, as it were. And so, you know, I just thought that was a neat little tidbit. Mm. We got the red yeah. lightsaber in the first one with the with the Padawan, and then in this one we get, I guess two things really, because we get we get the Hutt mind trick, but you know, going back to Xantos, he has a he does have a memory of his childhood. And as the Jedi lore firmed up a little bit, this is just like the Kia Di Mundi thing, where it firmed up a little bit later on that, Jedi were taken, you know, from their parents when they were much younger, than like they're not supposed to have a memory of their
right,
family.
Right.
Or they're not supposed to be married. And so, you know, I like that. It speaks to the looser nature of things.
One of the things that I guess really stuck out to me in the book, and it was something because it sticks so well with something we learn about Obi-Wan as a character and Yoda later on, specifically from the OT. And this really seemed to be a thing that those two characters practice in regards to Luke, which is there's a point at the closer to the beginning of the book where Obi-Wan wanted to blurt out the question, but one of the Jedi's most serious rules was not to cross-examine a master. Truth can hold great power. Therefore, the decision to share it must be weighted. Only the master could decide on revelation or concealment according to the greater good. And I love the way that Jude Watson picks that up, mm-hmm. puts that in Obi-Wan's mind, because it applies so well, not to the prequel trilogy, but it applies all the way to the OT when we're talking about Luke Skywalker. And if this is something that's a Jedi trait, it makes so much sense too for Yoda with Luke as well. And their handling of the whole idea about telling him about his father.
Right. I think that's a great insight. That's not even, and the reason I'm sort of like stammering here is because I read that and I accepted it and I moved on and I didn't even really catch it at that depth. And as you explain your read on it there, I can't disagree. Like, this is a terrific explainer for that. Because that's a thing that Star Wars fans have been wrestling with for since the big revelation in Return of the Jedi is, how do you sit on that one, Obi-Wan? But you're absolutely right. I mean, how can a kid's book do this? You know, like I know.
Isn't that great? Like, I was shocked. I was just shocked.
Yeah, that's amazing.
And What's so smart about it, because again, I think it always brings me back to what I always thought about Obi-Wan and Yoda, which was they realized that the truth has great power.
Yeah.
And the responsibility of how and when you share truth, because truth is always a good thing, but it can also hurt and it can also wound and it can also be terrible truth. So how and when they talk about to Luke his father is going to be a very sensitive subject, and especially with the ways in which they had so much trouble with Anakin in the first place, I'm sure they're being extra careful with Luke. And so it's not that they want to lie to him, it's just they're not sure exactly when is going to be the best time to tell him.
Right,
So... Yeah, I picked that up and I was like, wow, this is an 82-page kids book that's just like blowing my mind.
Yeah, you know, it is hats off to Watson, because that really is a terrific read on that. And I'm kind of kicking myself for blowing past that. That is really, really cool. you can then turn around and say, well, here's an example of why the Jedi falter is because they did that with the truth. But it does, you know, like you said, the truth has great power, and how you say something, how you break something to someone always is a decision about how well you think they can handle it, how well they can take it. Are you good enough to accomplish something? Are you, what do you think of, whatever, my house or my new outfit or anything like that? You know, many of the truths we cling to depend on our point of view and also on, whether it's going to hurt,
absolutely.
And I have to consider how to say things, this, you know?
Yeah. How many people hold things back because they know how much it's going to hurt somebody that they love?
Right.
How many superhero movies have that as a part of for that exact reason, to keep somebody safe So I think it's just a really, the thing that I'm loving about this series is that I get a great amount of Star Wars. Like, there's so much Star Wars that's packed into these little books. I'm getting such a great reward for so little time invested. Yeah. It's insane. And so I'm just really glad we do, like, hey, let's do this, because I'm having a grand old time with these books.
Yeah. Book club has been a lot of fun. And I think that, second one in a row in this series, second book in this series, second one in a row where you and I would both say, you know what? Spend a couple of bucks and revisit it. I mean, it really is.
Absolutely.
It really is a fun little time capsule. You'll enjoy it. I really do think that. I mean, you're not going to, get the leather bound collector's edition, later on down the road. But this is you got a plane trip, you got something coming up, you want something light. I mean, honestly, this would be the definition, in a sense, of summer reading. This is not going to be something that, is going to derail. You can consume this very easily. Which is not a knock. I mean, it's entertainment, and it is entertaining. So,
absolutely.
I know we're not the only ones that have read this series or these two books by this point. And I would invite our listeners. You guys have been really great about engaging us. Have you read this book? If you read this book because of our ramblings about it here, go ahead and let us know. Matt mentioned earlier on the show, Nerd Party is on Facebook, and you can find us on Twitter, and you can find us on all of these different places. But Matt, if they want to reach out to you online, where can they find you?
Absolutely. You can catch me on Twitter, MattRushing02. I'm over on the Instagram at MRushing. You can find me here on the network doing another show with Drea Kaufman called Owl Post. It's a Harry Potter podcast, and we're walking through each and every chapter of the Harry Potter series. It's been a lot of fun, and so I hope that you'll join us. If you're a new Harry Potter fan or an old one, we're the perfect podcast for you, honestly. You can also find me on the Trek FM network. I'm doing the General Geek Show there, the 602 Club. If you like what John and I do here, John's on many times on the 602 Club, and we're talking with a whole other rotating set of cast of characters that come on and talk with us. It's just fantastic, and we talk as many fandoms as we possibly can, so we don't just narrow it down to one. And then I'm doing the Orb with Chris Jones, where we talk about Deep Space Nine, which is a lot of fun there. And I do have a brand new show, John. I know people are shocked to hear that because they're wondering what else, when do I sleep? But it's a biweekly podcast called Cinema Stories, and it is about film through the lens of faith. And so I hope you'll check it out. We've got a couple of episodes right now. We did Guardians of the Galaxy 2 and Wonder Woman.
Yeah.
So now, if people are wondering where they can catch up with old John Mills and talk some more Star Wars or anything else that you're doing, where can they find you?
Oh, I'm Kessel Junkie. That's how people know me online. And you can also find me right here on the network co-hosting Great Shot Kid with Mike Schindler, where we look at the work and influences of, the Star Wars galaxy. Sort of it's not just a behind-the-scenes thing, but looking at the stuff that they've done outside of Star Wars or that influenced Star Wars. It's a pretty cool show, I think. I'm also co-hosting again with Mike Schindler over on the Trek FM network, Stage 9, where everything I said about what we do for Great Shot Kid, we do for Star Trek people. And you can find me co-hosting Words with Nerds with my pal Craig, which is a show that defies description. But we talk a lot about nerdy things and occasionally argue with each other, which can be fun in and of itself. But, you know, all that said, Matt, I think there's only one thing left to say. I think it's time to close negotiations.
John, negotiations are closed.
Join the revolution. Join the Nerd Party.